Some women impersonate Sex and the City's Carrie Bradshaw with vast closets full of fantastic clothing. Even Sarah Jessica Parker pretends to be Carrie Bradshaw when she walks the red carpet. However, there is one woman in New York City who, if he knew her, would have been Darren Star's real muse. Let me introduce you to Susan S. Warner, the adorable petite blonde who at 59 lost her handsome, extraordinary husband to cancer 6 months after her wonderful 32-year-old son died by suicide. It's now 4 years later. After the most challenging days and nights, Susan decided to live her best life possible. And just like that, Susan was suddenly single. Carrie may have Susan beat on exposure, but Susan has Carrie beat on life's experiences. Listen in.
Susan, hi, this is Lois.
Hey, Lois, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Thank you.
So we're thinking about today's topic, and I'm just curious. This is one of the things I've sometimes thought about often enough. When you're single and you're over 60, I'm really curious, and I don't mean to be cute, but who zippers your dress?
I zipper my dress, and I have a very funny story about that. The first affair I attended was the wedding of my college roommate's daughter. And I went to Albany by myself, and I was really nervous, and I brought my clothes, and I check into my hotel room, and I'm talking to my friends, and the man I was seeing at that time offered to drive me to Albany, and I said, well, that's ridiculous, and I took the train, and I was on the phone with my sister-in-law, who was a great support for me, Angie, and she said, you know, if it gets rough, just, you know, take a drink, you know, have a glass of wine, go back to the hotel and put on Bravo. It's all good. You just do what you can do. So I was doing some work, and then I go to get dressed. I can't zip my dress. What am I going to do? My first phenomenon. It never happened in my New York apartment. I guess I wasn't getting into formal wear. Couldn't zip my dress. I open my door. I peek out, and there is my roommate sister that I've known since she's probably been 12. She's now, you know, a woman in her 50s or 60s, and I yell out the door, Sandy, please come help me. And she runs into my room and zips my dress, and we both had a really good laugh over it. So it is a problem. I know people that call the doorman. I know people that call a neighbor. We make do. Resourcefulness, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, right? And we find people to help us zip our dresses. There's many a struggle I've had getting out of a sports bra or getting out of something tight that I am literally dancing around the bedroom, perspiring because I'm so tangled up trying to get out of an outfit or a sports bra or something else. But ultimately, I'm out of them. I'm not wearing them right now. So all good. But it's a great question. And I think it's a metaphor for single life. How do you zip your own dress? It's a great title to a book, actually, Lois.
Right. I was thinking exactly the same thing as you were speaking. And also, I think it speaks volumes of, you know, what life is really all about. But I have to ask you this question. It may throw you a little, but do situations like this ever break you down where you just like, oh my God, the reality of it all?
Not for me. I get angry. And then, as I said, I end up being a sweaty mess because, you know, you get frustrated and you can't get out of it. And literally dancing, you know, with my head stuck in some sort of dress, dancing around my bedroom, trying to wiggle out of something. Sometimes, actually, I laugh. I do. I actually sit down and laugh about it and say, wow, this should be your biggest struggle. But it is a metaphor for single life, and it is the metaphor for the struggles that we have, and we get through them. Because as I said, I'm not wearing that gown right now, and I did get out of the sports bra. So apparently, I wiggled through it, metaphorically. So I laugh at it. You know, you've got to laugh. You got to laugh, because certainly not being able to zip my dress is not a reason to cry. It's not.
Well,
there are other reasons. That's not one of them.
Well, obviously, you must have gone through a lot to get to that point where, when you do wiggle out of your dress or your sports bra or whatever, you know that you can accomplish. And that's a feeling that a lot of people don't achieve. But once you experience it, like you, all of a sudden It's like, it doesn't feel like an overwhelming, you know, challenge anymore.
You're 100% correct. So the end of the metaphor is once you're out of it, you came out the other side. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of what my mission is here. There are struggles along the way. You know, I've often said, if the road were straight and not curved and bumpy, we would not be very interesting people. It's those curves and bumps that make us interesting, that make us deeper, smarter, more compassionate. So getting out of that dress, zipping that dress, is just another bump in the road. And when I got out of the dress, I was deeper and better and smarter and kinder and I grew. So yes, it is the perfect metaphor for what single life is, widowhood is like, divorce life is like after. Yeah, it's a good one.
You know what? I hope everyone that listens to this really understands what you're saying, because it's so important. And if you accept it and you do it, life could be so much better, even though you may think it may not be, but it certainly is.
Keep your sense of humor. Definitely keep your sense of humor. Laugh at yourself. It's so much easier than crying. Laugh at yourself.
It's so much easier than crying. I wonder how many people would agree with you on that line. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've tested it, though. Yeah. You know, I'm not gonna ever talk to you and tell you that this is an easy journey. It's not. There are dark times. There are sad. I just went through my husband's birthday, and it was dark. And you know, I went to the cemetery, and all I wanted him to do was hold me.
Mm-hmm.
I did, and I cried. You know, I wanted him to hold me again. When my husband held me, the world was always all right. And now it's harder. You know, so it's not always easy. And I don't want to ever paint that picture that I'm laughing all the time. There are dark times and sad times, but I laugh more than I'm sad. And I find laughter is a lot easier than being sad. So you try to find that balance.
How did you get so accepting?
What's your choice? I came from a very pragmatic, matriarchal family. I've explained in my writing that my grandmother lost both of her daughters as adults, and would say to you, you know, hey, babe, how are you today? I'm good. You don't have a choice. I want to go on. I've never experienced not wanting to go on. So if I'm going to go on, almost as revenge, I'm going to live my best life. I am. I'm going to do it the best way I can because I want to be here, and I've made that conscious decision. I want to be here.
Did you think a lot about it, or did it just come naturally?
That's interesting. I think it was an evolution. In the beginning, when I suffered my losses, I always knew I wanted to go on. I didn't want to end it. I didn't want to stop. I always said, and I've also talked about this, when my husband's diagnosis was dire in the hospital, which was only about 2 weeks after his diagnosis. His surgery was, they said it wasn't going to work. I took my daughter on a walk around the hospital, and I said, and she was hysterical, of course. And I said to her, we have a turn. We have a right turn to make. We have a next chapter. Mm-hmm. We are going to move forward and live our best life. And she said it was the most impactful thing that anybody's ever said to her. I know there's another chapter. I know there's a right turn. And I'm trying to make those turns, make them judiciously, and make them with gusto. And so is she. So is she.
Just a curiosity question. How long after your husband died did you get to this, you know, conclusion?
Chronologically, are you asking me?
Yes, yes.
I could get out of bed every day. And it's funny, I was at a doctor's office one day shortly after his death, and she said, I don't know how you get out of bed in the morning. I said, that's not really helpful. Like, don't say that to someone. That's not really helpful if I can tell you I can get out of bed. Immediately, I always knew I wanted to move forward. I wanted to live. I knew there was more out there for me, a next chapter. And for me, that was the deciding push to move on this journey. Of trying to talk to other people about it, write about it, podcast about it, have a book about it that's forthcoming. Right away, I knew there was another chapter out there.
But when people say things to you, they're really asking for themselves. They're not like really reviewing you.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Right.
When my son died and was a suicide, I can't explain to you the amount of people that wanted the details, because they wanted to make a checklist that their child didn't come under those factors.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. You know, did he do drugs? Was he depressed? Was he manic? Was he seeing someone? Was he always, okay, so my son didn't do this. My son didn't do this. My girl didn't do this. They're going to be fine. But right. They almost felt like it was a checklist. And if David filled that bucket and theirs didn't, then they were safe.
Right.
So, you know, yes, people do it to reaffirm their safety and their well-being. Absolutely. And you know what? That's okay. We all have to do what gets us through the day, right? And
right.
We all use mental mechanisms to get there. And if that comparison is what works for you to make you sleep better at night, it didn't hurt me. It didn't hurt me. But I knew what they were doing.
You're very generous.
Well, I also know, you know, it's interesting. To take that a step further, I also know that I can see in relationships that friends don't want to be in my situation. That there's a little bit of hesitancy sometimes, a little bit that I can be a reminder of what could be. And that makes people uncomfortable sometimes, particularly in couple situations.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, a lot of people in their 60s have had some health scares, oftentimes the husband as well as the wife. And they're thinking, she reminds me of what could be the end game. And I don't love that. And it's really a subliminal thing, I believe, and sometimes subconscious, but I do believe it exists.
Of course it
that
exists.
I can be a reminder.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I can be a reminder of what could be the inevitable. And that is sometimes difficult for people.
But is it difficult for you?
No.
I find that pretty amazing.
It's not. No. Don't take that as a. Aren't I wonderful? It's not difficult.
No. I don't.
I just
your whole attitude is, you know, just not where my mind goes. That's for sure. I would be
resentful. Because you're not in this situation. You know, it's hard to project how you would react when you haven't been there. And that's not a negative. I hope that you're not there for another 20 years. But it's hard to project how you'd react because it's so new. You can't, it's just like you can't dream about someone older. You can't age someone in a dream that hasn't, like if a parent died at 50, you don't see them in a dream at 70. Your mind
right.
can't do that. Your mind also can't project how you will react in a situation that's never happened.
Well,
so
I don't know if you think this is a fair comparison, but I still say you're generous because I was even in a conversation yesterday when we were talking about the, you know, the school shootings and what's going on.
Yes.
And, you know, and I was deep in a conversation and we're on the same side, but yet we were debating how we would deal with it if we were in charge. And the other person said to me, well, you don't really understand because you don't have grandchildren. And I didn't answer that. I didn't say anything. It was just another nasty reminder to me, even though I'm not sitting around every day wanting a grandchild, but it's still like, it's kind of like I don't have the checklist done of life.
Yeah.
You know? So
I don't mean that. I don't mean that.
Yeah.
But and in that, can I make one statement about the shooting in Texas?
Sure,
and that is,
this is your podcast.
In losing a son to suicide and losing my husband 6 months later to cancer, mm-hmm. I cannot fathom the depth of grief that these parents are feeling when they sent their young children to school and they didn't
mm-hmm.
come home. So I feel that I have a compassion and a pretty deep well of understanding grief. I cannot say that I can walk in their shoes. That's the depth I think that they must be suffering. I just wanted to put that out there because I think it's really important. No matter what I've endured right now, I can't fathom sending a school-aged child to school and then not coming home like that.
Well, that's how I felt yesterday when I said I couldn't send my kids to school and this guy turned around to me thinking like, you know, well, you don't have grandchildren, so, and we don't have any choice. And, you know, he was like challenging me about it and I didn't mm-hmm. like being in the category of the have-nots because that's
yeah.
who I am. You know, so that's the kind of thing I was talking to you about.
I hope I didn't project that because I don't mean that. I don't mean that you can't understand. I mean that, fortunately, there are some circumstances in life that until you experience it, you don't have the same depth of understanding.
Right.
And I don't mean grandchildren, because you have a child.
Right.
So that's kind of silly. But I didn't mean that as a negative.
But I just still think that you, as I say every podcast, that you are tolerant, you're generous, you know, you see a much
sometimes
larger picture, and you don't need the confirmation of someone else, if that's the right word, you know, of thinking that you're fabulous for you to be fabulous. You know, the rest of the world, Susan, the rest of the world is, they need other people to, you know, kind of applaud them for them to feel good about themselves. So, but talking about feeling good about, talking about feeling good about yourself, what do you think? I mean, we're going completely in a different direction now. Do you think, but this is part of the title of our today's podcast, do you think women care what they look like after they lose a husband? Because I check out a lot of women, you know, to see, you know, how they appear, their presentation. So I'm curious about your answer to that question.
I think that's a double-edged sword. So you have two types of people. The one woman that doesn't care at all, that just gives it up, doesn't care, doesn't want to be attractive to men, doesn't want to date, doesn't want to be in that social scene. Then you have the other woman who is more careful, more concerned, because she's now back out there. And not just back out there dating, but back out there as a person that's not getting the reaffirmation from a husband, honey, I love you, honey, you're beautiful. So she's getting the wink from the waiter, or from the guy standing online at Whole Foods, or someone walking down the street, or someone in the elevator. So I think they tend to be more concerned, more groomed, more interested in plastic surgeries or, you know, injections and things like that, because they're now single. And it's funny, because I know that as a single woman, I am now hyper concerned about being made up when I go out and dressing the way I do and being put together. Yes, I think that for that prong of woman, it's a hyper concern. The one that doesn't care anymore, just doesn't care anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And I never think that's good. Self-image is really important. Like, I don't think you should go over the edge, but I think keeping yourself fit and attractive and presentable is really important for your own self-image.
Hmm. Another good t-shirt.
But it's definitely double-edged. You've got, you know, mm-hmm, divergent women. One doesn't care at all, you know, never gets stressed, stays in sweat, gains weight, you know, doesn't put makeup on, and then the one that is very concerned. I fall on the very concerned side. I admit that.
Think that there is such a thing as depression, where people just, you know, become like a cloud goes over them, so they can't see the real world?
Of course. There's depression with everything. I mean, it's not exclusive to divorce or death. There's a depression for lots of reasons. Mm-hmm. And yes, that's exactly what happens. But that's never a healthy situation. No one will say, wow, it's really good to be in a depressive mode. So, you know, I think that when you color your hair and put some makeup on and get dressed, you're going to feel a whole lot better about yourself. Mm-hmm. You know, I was that person during COVID that didn't wear sweats, stuck in my house. I got dressed every day. It made me feel better.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So I think that that is a tactic of better mental health, personally. Yeah, I do.
You mean,
I think people also...
And you think kind of like,
talked about,
yeah,
you get
ahead
what you give. So if you go out there and you are, you know, you are put together, you're going to get a better response from people than if you're not. So it's a get what you give kind of situation. You're going to get feedback that's positive when you are being your best person, as opposed to being slovenly and ill-groomed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that you'll not only will you feel better about yourself, but you'll get a better response from people. So I think it mm-hmm works both ways.
But what about people that, like, you know, are just so down that they can't fake it until they make it? I mean,
get help.
Yeah.
Get help. There are bereavement groups. There are divorce groups. There are doctors. And there are doctors that take your insurance. And there are government-funded helplines and Zoom calls. It doesn't have to be a costly thing. Get help. Talk it through. It's amazing. I have trouble with therapy personally. I don't love to give it all up. That's probably hard to believe. But there are people, when you say it, there's a psychological theory that when you say it out loud, you then own it. Doctors will make you say things that you wouldn't normally say out loud, and that can be a revelation. So if you're in that cloud, if you are think you are depressed, please get help. Mm-hmm. It's really beneficial. It will make you think. It will make you turn around a little bit, I think. It's important to talk to someone.
I'm quiet because I'm thinking about what you're saying, and I think to a lot of people, you know, that's profound. It sounds, you know, like an everyday piece of advice, but
yeah.
Coming from you to the right people, I think that's going to be very important.
There's so many ways to get help.
Yeah, right. So is it ever too quiet in the house? And that also speaks volume about living alone when you don't have
uh-huh.
company. What is that
uh-huh.
like when you went from a full house to a quiet
uh-huh.
house?
Mm-hmm. I know I've been alone too long when I start to talk to the mirrors.
I love that. I think that that's great therapy. I do that. I do that all the time. I straighten out the world. I straighten out myself when I look in the mirror. So tell us more.
Yes, but I will. I will tell you two things. One is my sister-in-law, Angie, we were talking about having dinner by yourself in restaurants. And I'm not a great eater, so having dinner by myself is not one of the things that I relish.
Mm.
She loves to have dinner alone. And we were talking about that. Like, I'll go to a movie alone. I'll go to a play alone. I'll go anywhere. I'll shop alone. I just don't love to eat dinner alone because I don't. And she said, you know what the difference is between me and you, Susan? You don't have to. I'm sorry. I don't have to. You do. She has a husband, you know. So
right.
She eats alone. It's by choice. When you're alone as a widow or a divorcee and it's not a choice, it becomes a whole different experience. And I thought that was pretty profound.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yes, it is.
So does it ever get too quiet? Sure it does. Thank goodness for my dog, Winston, who has heard more and listened to more anecdotes and more stories. Yeah, it does. It does. But everything's a trade-off and life's a compromise. You know, do you ever get annoyed at your husband?
All the time.
Right. Right. So isn't that the opposite of the house being too quiet?
Oh, yeah. I'm telling him to
right.
shut up 20 times a day.
Right. Mm-hmm. Correct. So, yes, it does get too quiet sometimes. And what do you do about that? Turn on the radio and dance. Go do a project. Read a book. Watch, stream, you know, Netflix or Prime. Go out. Go for a walk. Go window shop. Yeah, of course it does.
Does it
go
take discipline to do that? Does it take discipline to do that?
Sure it does. Of course it does. It takes... You know what it does? It takes insight to realize you're in it. That awareness is the first thing. Once you realize you're in it and you got to get out of it, then it's easier to get out of it. But it takes a lot of self-awareness to realize you're in that spin of loneliness
mm-hmm.
and darkness. So awareness would be first. Once you're aware, you know, once you identify the problem, it's easier to fix the problem. Same thing.
Do you feel like
so once you're aware?
Yeah, do you feel euphoric and proud of yourself when you get through these periods?
No. No. Ooh. Honestly, no. I feel euphoric and proud of myself when I accomplish something that I didn't think I could accomplish. When I was protected by my husband in things and I didn't know how to do it, and now I do it with proficiency. And that can be the landscaping in my summer home. That is primo right now, which was his wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
It could be banking online, which baffled me when he died.
Mm-hmm.
It could be putting a chair together because I wasn't the handy one, but now I am. That makes me euphoric. Accomplishing things that I have an attitude now, I can do anything, just teach me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can. Mm-hmm. Maybe not everything well, but I can do it. Just teach me. And I wasn't like that. I was protected.
Right.
So that's what makes me euphoric.
So mm-hmm. that comes to my next question. Like, what are the major challenges that you felt was most difficult? Was it financial, repairs around the house, even an errand that you never had to do before, What's the whole what's your whole take on that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It is, the challenges were the things that I didn't understand. As I said, I'm a very independent woman, always have been. My husband's goal was to find those things that he could take care of me with. Mm-hmm. I never, ever knew how to book a flight. Travel constantly, still travel constantly. And I will tell you, it's the one thing I have not accomplished. My daughter, who is a master at it, books my flights for me. And she takes joy in that. So that works. But learning the financials, I was drowning. I remember my accountant said, okay, put all your expenses on paper. And I did it and I cried. I said, oh my God, I can't believe how big these expenses are. I didn't know.
Right.
And again, my daughter said to me, Mom, we all cry when we put our expenses on paper, no matter what mm-hmm. age you are, you can't believe what the out. So it was, yes, it was financial. Yes, it was my summer house that was overwhelming. I used to sit outside and just like dart, my eyes would dart. What do I need to do next? Right? I couldn't relax. And mm-hmm. then it all fell into place. Things do fall into place. It's the old take a deep breath, find people to help you. You know, as a career, I'm a college counselor. I help people get into college. So if I need help with finances, then I find someone whose expertise is that. That's not my expertise. Find people that can do for you what their expertise is, and then let them do it. I'm not a micromanager at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, with finances, yes, though, you know, you feel like, can I really trust this person? Or even if this person is very trustworthy, you know, will he do the job I really need he or she to do?
That's not my problem. I trust. Once mm-hmm. I make a decision that this person is in looking out for my best interest, being an accountant or a financial person or a landscaper, once I know that they have my best interest in heart, I'm good at turning it over.
That's great.
And then little by little, I've learned to take pieces of those puzzles back. So where I needed someone to help me do things before, I've learned to do them now, but at my own leisure, in my own time, so that I feel accomplished. But I was drowning in the beginning, absolutely drowning, couldn't sleep, felt the burden on my shoulders, didn't know how to pay a bill, didn't know what the bills were, you know, didn't know how to do the repairs, didn't know who to call. And then I figured it out. And the one thing you have is this time, nothing needed to be done in 24 hours. I just felt it did. And my daughter was a huge help to me, huge. And I put my ducks in a row.
God bless her.
God bless her is right.
Right. But, you know, what would take 5 seconds out of your life saying, honey, you know, you have to call the gardener. Now that could be an hour of your time.
Yep. But then I did it, didn't I?
Right.
And then the next time it won't take an hour. It'll take 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I can become that person.
Very encouraging.
Just teach me. Yeah, mm-hmm. just teach me. I can do it. Just teach me. Yep. But it is all very overwhelming.
Yeah, it is. So here is another topic that could be a little sticky, but a lot of people want to know about it. It's like, when you became a widow, like, how did your friends treat you at first? You know, did you feel any change in the relationships? You know, was it different, the same? Were they sympathetic? Were they nervous? Did they know how to talk to you? Did you know how to answer them?
I understand.
Yeah, go ahead. All right.
That is so multi-layered. So
right.
At first, everyone is enormously sympathetic and very involved. And then you grow, and there are people that aren't as comfortable with you as a self-sufficient person. Some people are more comfortable with you when you're needy and broken. And have a hard time with you when you put your life back together. Relationships do change, particularly with couples, because it's a couple's world and you're not a couple anymore. And the dynamics change. And the biggest thing is that I found was the husbands. The ones that treat me as a whole person and the ones that don't really have any relationship with me anymore. That was interesting. I mean, I have certain friends, one in particular, out east, out in the Hamptons, that always included me as a single person. And I said to her one day, Barry, how come I'm a whole person to you? And she said, first of all, my mom was divorced at a young age, and I was very comfortable with her always being a single person and a whole person. And secondly, you are a whole person. It's like, you know, next week we're going out with Joan and Jerry, and the following week we're going out with Susan. Not Susan and date, not Susan and guest, not Susan and whoever's with her. Susan, I was a whole entity to her. And that's been for years, and it was really wonderfully heartwarming to me that I was a whole person. Some husbands in relationships don't really relate to me at all. I never hear from them. I mean, good friends that I don't really hear from the husbands anymore. They, you know, it just fell by the wayside. Still friendly with the women, but they kind of disappeared from my life. And that's okay too. And then there are the husbands that would be here in the middle of the night for me if I called, who are protective and kind and loving, and would be here if I called them at 3 o'clock in the morning, help me, would be there in a flash. So it all kind of shakes out, and it's okay on every level. Okay.
Well, why do you say it's okay on every level?
Because
some of it is, because some of it is not. It's not. It's hurtful. It's upsetting. It's different. It's a
big
change.
It's not. It's not.
Why?
It's not hurtful. It's not a thing. Because obviously the relationship I had with the husband who I never hear from wasn't a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe his relationship was with my husband. Maybe it was our relationship as a couple. But he can't relate to me as a single woman anymore. So that's okay.
So you don't resent it?
It's fluid. No, I do not. Life is fluid. And things ebb and flow. And when it's stagnant and not fluid is when you don't grow. When it isn't when you don't get really happy, when it just stays status quo. So it's fine. It's fine. I just redeveloped the relationship. No, it is not hurtful, and it is not wrong. It's
I don't know
different.
If the whole world would agree with you, but it's wonderful that you're saying that.
Well, it's an evolution of 4 years. So
yeah, but
it
you know, wait
time.
A second. I could live 70 years and not change my mind if someone doesn't do something that I think that they should have done.
Again, manage your expectations.
Right.
It makes me a happier person if it doesn't make me angry or sad or resentful.
Mm-hmm.
So manage your expectations. I've got enough fulfillment in my life with friends and family that if someone falls off, I meet someone new. I've met some new people and developed some stronger relationships since my losses that have been incredibly fulfilling. People that have really, you know, changed me. So it's all an ebb and flow, a fluidity of life. And as I said, I like the fluidity better than I like being stagnant.
Mm-hmm. That's a good tip.
May not work for everyone, but again, you know, I've added to my friend group. I've developed deeper relationships with different people. My relationships have changed with some people. That's how life works.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know a lot of friends at my stage of the game who have said that they've dropped a lot of friends that, you know, were peripheral and didn't fulfill needs. So what's the difference? Why
there really
happened?
Is no it's difference, decided. But there's a sensitivity that may be a little different for most people, you know.
Some people, yeah, but a lot of people that it changed with me weren't doing it to be insensitive. It just didn't work for them, or there was they weren't comfortable. That's okay. That's okay. I'm okay with that.
You know, I just have to make a comment. Like when you were speaking about, you know, being a third wheel, or you know, mm-hmm. like why? I don't understand that. There has never been a part of my life when I was single, married the first time. You know, single again, married the second time. And I'm proud to say that Elliot, my husband, you know, would never even occur to him that a third person, you know, would be with us and we wouldn't be with another couple. In fact, last night we went out with half of a couple because the woman wasn't available. The husband said he wanted to go with us to the event we went to. And it's kind of mm-hmm. like, it opens up, it's like being with a new person because now he was free
yeah.
to talk
yeah.
and
yeah.
you know, and he wasn't worried about what he had to say. Not that, you know, anything was, you know, very strict going on in their relationship.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
No, I understand. But,
yeah,
I understand.
Right. So, but we never, and I am always asking, I feel like my life is fuller
with single people. That's why I have so many single friends, because they're available, willing to do things that a couple is not necessarily willing to do. On a whim, I'll say, we're going to the street fair, or we're going to this art exhibit, or we're going to walk a dog, or whatever. Do you want to go? And the single person who is always looking to be asked, you know, will say, yes, I'll go because it's an opportunity. And then you get to a point with a lot of single people where they feel so good about the relationship that they could say no to me. I don't feel like going this time, but they'll know that I will ask again. And I don't know. I didn't come from a family necessarily like that. You know, that my mother and father were very social and they didn't care whether it was two or one, but I never quite understood why people would, you know, kind of put themselves in a situation. However, you know, a situation where they need another couple, they just can't go out with a single person. And I don't even know if they're conscious of it, but that's their comfort zone. However, one time, many years ago, I heard my husband's uncle say, he said, I'm not going to that thing because there's too many, you know, widows there and I'm not paying for them. I thought, you cheap bastard. If that is the reason.
But think about that.
Yeah.
Okay, but think about that. And that is another variant of being the third person. So as a woman, it's an awkward situation. Fortunately, 99% of the couples I go out with would never let me pay. Never in a million years. But it's as a woman, it's awkward. And I had a really funny scenario that I have friends that are extraordinarily generous. And every time we went out, they were paying for me. And I felt so guilty. So we were going to dinner one night and I brought them a beautiful get home gift. And I said, like, I have to, I'm sitting at the bar waiting for them and they pull up and they run in. They said, Susan, I can't believe this, but he left his wallet home and she didn't bring it back. Do you have a credit card? So not only did I give them a gift, I paid for dinner that night and we laughed about it. And I was happy to, but it is an awkwardness, particularly for a woman with going out with couples. You know, I know we never had a problem with it, my husband and I, ever. And he would never let a woman pay, ever. So that's my sensibility. But you do in the back of your head think, gosh, I feel so guilty, you know? So that is a bit of an awkwardness that the woman feels when she's the third. It is.
Yeah, but you're not addressing the cheapness of some men that simply don't want, you know, a single guy or a single woman along because they don't want to pay for them. And they don't know,
As I said, 99% of the people I go out with would never let me pay. So no, I don't. But I will tell you, as the single woman, you do. It does pass in your mind. You feel a little guilty that you're not pulling your own weight.
Right. Well,
so
my
look
best
at it from the other side.
Yeah. My best girlfriend since the second grade has never been married. She goes out with us all the time. Elliot always picks up the check because he knows I would kill him if he didn't. And he's used to doing it. And the result of it is that I have the most gorgeous jewelry because she loves to shop. And she goes out and she buys me my ankle bracelets, my necklace, my watch, my this. And occasionally she picks up the check. And I'm uncomfortable when she does that. So to me, I have to say to the world that's listening, not to go out with a single person because of money or threat or anything. You're missing a huge opportunity. The whole conversation changes. You learn different things. You hear the expression of opinions that you would never hear from. You know, couples that are together are always worried what the other person is going to think. Not me, because like my first husband said, Lois leaves nothing unsaid, and I'll challenge anybody. And poor Elliot has lived a very, very difficult life with my big mouth. There's no question about it. A lot of the time it works, and it works well, but there's a lot of times that it's pretty nasty and pretty awful, and most men would not put up with it. Elliot, it just rolls off his shoulder. He could give a crap what I have to say. He's going to do what he wants, or he'll fix it some way that he's not unhappy about it. But you know, I could never quite understand that. But anyway, Susan, do you think that a lot of it has to do with women that don't necessarily want a single woman that looks like you around because you're a threat?
You know, I remember hearing that my whole married life, you know, that married women are always threatened by single friends or widows. I have not found that at all. So maybe I'm just not attractive enough to threaten them, but I have not found that at all. Zero. So I'm going to give my sisterhood more credit than that. I don't think that's a reality, at least not in my world. I have not found friends at all threatened at all. I said, maybe I'm not pretty enough and that I'm not a threat, but not at all. So again, kudos to my sisterhood. That has not been an issue. No.
I couldn't disagree with you more, but okay. Yeah, that's what, you know, that's how you've,
you know. On what level do you disagree?
I think that a lot of women, I think 99.9% of women are always worried that another woman is going to steal their husband.
There's no question about it. Seriously? If that's the case, then they have an underlying problem in their marriage.
Well, 99.9%. No, it's not their marriage. It's within themselves. Do you know that in my business life, I've only dealt with men, a very few women, okay? And if I felt that, you know, some of them would say to me, like, you know, I trust you. And I say, excuse me, you're a size 2. I'm a size 12, 14. I'm all business. I have no interest in your husband. If you just spend 1 second, that's 1 second that you're making me very unhappy. That is not going to happen. But these women, so if it wasn't me, it was somebody else, they were always concerned about their husbands just because of different circumstances in their lives. And then there were times that women would say to me, you are with my husband in party and event circumstances. You know, how is he? Who is he? And I would say to them, whether I really thought that or not, I have to admit, your husband is completely a business person first and does not even look to the left, does not look to the right. And I think I've saved marriages and I've saved a lot of grief from a lot of women over the years. So I don't know what path you walked out, but I could tell you, I can't even imagine a woman being the wife of a gynecologist, what they may say.
My husband of 38 years was exceptionally handsome and probably the nicest person I've ever known. And he worked in a woman's industry. He was in fashion, retail, and wholesale, and worked and traveled with women 100% of the time. Never, ever crossed my mind. Never. I'm going to back it up again and tell you that in my experience as a single woman with my friends, zero has that ever been a consideration. So I don't know if it's a demographic. I don't know if it's a slight generational thing. We're slightly apart. I have not experienced that at all. Again, hats off to women in my world. Okay. Yep.
Well, I think that's a good place to end because we're speaking for almost an hour. But I have to say, I want to say to everyone that's listening, and this is another T-shirt or a message that's going to go out to people. I think that a lot of women and men that are single, whether they went through a marriage or didn't, could learn a lot from your words. Because even if they're not there, but this is, I think, helpful to everyone. It's not even necessarily meant as a compliment to you. You have a different way of looking at things, very positive. And, you know, I still love the saying, fake it till you make it. Because if what you're saying does open up doors and brings great opportunity for people for the life that they're not leading and they want to lead, then they should listen to you. And you know, many times when we're speaking, not many times, I would say 95% of the time when you're talking about, you know, the topic at hand, I'm applying it to my life. I'm saying, here's an opportunity to change for the better. Not for the better that I'm leading like a negative life, but yes.
No, I understand. We can all grow. We can all get better.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I hope that works. I hope people do find that in what we talk about.
They're going to find it greatly, and we will keep reinforcing it all the time. So thank you,
wonderful.
And till next time.
Thanks, Lois. Bye-bye.